Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, I think we waited too long, and that's the problem. So I got to edit the start time and see if that makes a difference.
I'm sorry, Calvin.
Yeah, hopefully it does it. Sorry, guys.
No, we're sorry that we had whatever happened to get it to this point, but I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It's the plant's fault.
I might have to close the browser again, sadly. Can't think of what else to do. Wait, have we been live this whole time?
No, I had Sam check it. It was just the Mises screen.
Oh, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are we live now?
God, I hope not.
Oh, she sees us now.
Okay. That's really weird. Okay. Apparently, we've been live this whole time. I'm not really sure how.
We're live.
All right. Yeah. So that is the strangest thing ever. I have no idea when we went live, but sorry about the lack of fancy intro or anything that really caught me off guard. So anyway, that's fine. I'll just get right into it. So this is Take Human Action PA, episode 42. I'm Calvin, I'm your host. And We've got a lot of exciting guests, returning guests and hosts all. I guess I'll just mention real quick, come see us at the Take Human Action Tour this weekend in New York, April 1st through 2nd. Tom Woods, Dave Smith, Maj, Gene Epstein, and more are going to be there. So definitely check us out there. It's all weekend long, Saturday and Sunday. Myself and Jacob and Autumn and several others of our team are going to be there, and Irene. So definitely make sure to check us out. I'll just let everyone go around quick and say hi. Start with Irene. How you doing?
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. I look forward to talking about this topic of the class at the Solutionary Center and look forward to seeing everybody Saturday in Manhattan, Blockchain Center. There are some coalition people coming, some people from the People's Party and some other coalition members. What a riot it's going to be.
Yeah, Irene is our resident doctor and co-founder of Liberty Speaks, so we're happy to have her as a part of this. And Rob, how are you doing?
Most excellent. Just here to talk about teaching some classes, something that I never do.
Yeah, your tech side seems to be working better than the streaming service right now, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're telling me.
Yeah, let's go to Regina. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, everybody. I'm Regina Badger, and I am the Issue Coalition's chair with an asterisk while we're in transition right now.
Right. Awesome. Well, I'm really glad to have you all. I've been really excited to have this conversation. So as was teased a little bit in the descriptions, we are going to be talking about our plan to bring liberty to the streets of Philadelphia with our Liberty 101 class will be in session soon at the Solutionary Center in downtown Philadelphia. And the group of us, along with several others, have been talking, and we have a plan. We have an outline for the class that we want to go through. We got a bunch of different topics. We're dividing them up and choosing our areas of focus, and we're going to talk about why they're all important and how we're going to communicate that to a new audience. So I'll just go through the issues here, then we can touch on them one at a time. What we have right now is we could talk about some inflation, bailouts, foreign policy, pharma and medicine, criminal justice, education, and the Second Amendment. Now, some of these
even before that, you know, I gave you those original slides, and I think like the basic foundations of liberty and you know what liberty, self-ownership, and actual rights are. I think that introduction is a real key part of what's going on.
Right, exactly. So we'll be covering that as well. But you know, what we will be getting into tonight is, you know, why all those issues matter and how we're going to be explaining them in a way that will make it, you know, make sense and just form a connection with everybody on those issues. So Rob, since you brought that up, why don't you start us off and tell me, like, for someone who's completely new to all of this, has, you know, maybe doesn't follow politics at all, like, what would you start them off with?
Well, I think, you know, a good place to start is at the beginning, and self-ownership, the concept of voluntary society. I think these are really the building blocks off of what everything else that we do comes off of. If it weren't for the concept of self-ownership, if we didn't have the right to our own life, to our own liberty and thoughts and actions, to our own property, then from that, you know, we wouldn't have the ability to really get into any of these other things. That's the foundation of any of these starting or any of these other concepts that we're going to touch on to. There is no there's no am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Sorry, but good. I'm having some problems there. These are those three, the right to life, liberty, and property, the concepts of self-ownership are the key building blocks from which all the other things stem off. That's kind of the whole point.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think we'll see here as we go along and in the class later on how all these specific issues that we mentioned before, how they all come back and connect to the core principles, and it's how it's all derived from them. And that's something that I think we have that a lot of the other political philosophies out there don't have. Like we don't have to guess what the response or what the, you know, correct position is for the issue of the day. We can take the first principles and apply it to come up with the answer.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. So do either of you have any thoughts on that before we move on? The core principles?
Well, yeah, I think I'd just like to add the concept of the fact that we are sovereign beings with the right to bodily autonomy and to choose what's put into our body, which ties into medical freedom and informed consent. And informed consent necessitates the ability to decline. And the concept of informed consent is a quintessential competition-based idea where people have the right to decide their risks and benefits. So those basic principles of liberty tie into the absolute antithesis of what happened during COVID mania.
Yeah, for sure. Regina, you got anything?
Yeah, I think these classes are going to be good for people to, one, understand that what we have as far as freedoms are built on the foundation of a lot of suffering, and a lot of people worked very hard and a lot of lives were lost for a lot of those freedoms. And I think because we live in such a cushioned, almost vacuum in society now, that we don't take that, we take that for granted. So I think just reminding people, like, yes, this is what your rights are, and this is how you need to protect them, and this is how people can sometimes slowly goalpost to taking them away from you. I think people really need to hear that sometimes. So, you know, rather than saying, like, you know, coming off as aggressive, saying like, you need to respect the freedoms, and, you know, all of our little kind of sayings online, we also need to say, hey, do you know why we feel this way? And I think educating with empathy is going to get us more people understanding us, rather than just saying like, come and take them, or, you know, not taking the jab, you know, which is sometimes a knee-jerk reaction.
Right, exactly. They need to understand why it's inherently abnormal, the process of what happened during COVID mania and all the other infringements, and also need to understand that in the history of mankind has the government and rulers used the idea of for your own good, or we're just here to protect you, whilst they infringe upon our ability to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And also, I like the idea that really the Constitution and Declaration of Independence really are documents that declare our own sovereign being natural rights as human conscious beings to have certain rights that should never be infringed upon.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking that a lot more of this will come out once we start diving into the individual topics. So we can start spending some time going over them. Now, we don't have to go through all of them, but I know that at least a few of us on here have a lot of thoughts on some of them, so we can definitely dive into that. So, well, the first one I had on here was inflation. So, Rob, you want to talk about that?
Oh, boy, do I. Well, I think this is a topic that everyone can relate to at the moment. So that's why I think it's one to start. It's a good one to start out with. You know, Mises described, and actually I think it was Milton Friedman who was the one who said that inflation is a monetary phenomenon everywhere and always. And what he meant by that is that, you know, obviously we have the aspects of economics of supply and demand, and those will have a direct impact on the price. But when we talk about inflation, what we're talking about is the increase in the money supply that gets lent out through preferential lending to the big banks and to their friends first. And that what this means is they get the benefit of the money inflation. It isn't like the quantity theorist said that all of a sudden there's much, you know, a bunch more money, so every dollar is not worth half, pretty twice as much. What happens is it's the way that it flows throughout society and the way that it is introduced. It gets introduced to the big banks, who then lend it out to their preferential customers, who get the benefit of being able to bid up the prices. And it's the low, it's the people who the money gets to less, because that money will flow throughout society and eventually connect to all of the aspects of the economy. But it gets to the poor and the lower income and the middle class really last. So it's the preferential lending that gets people the ability to bid the prices up, so that the people pay the higher prices. Then it does flow out through economy, but by the time it gets to the people, they've already suffered in not being able to compete with the higher bids and having to pay the higher prices. So it's a kind of a complex concept, but it shows the way that preferential lending is done to take wealth from the poor and hand it to the rich. And I think that that's a very important concept to understand in what's going on today.
Yeah, that's really it. Because when it comes down to it, and I didn't realize this for the longest time, but a lot of the other economic theories that are out there don't give satisfactory explanations for what causes inflation, like what brings this about in the first place, why it has such a disproportionate effect on, you know, the poor and the lower classes.
Yeah. Well, and another key aspect is, according to, you know, modern economic theory, the Keynesian view, lowering prices is a bad thing. And in fact, lowering prices is a good thing in a real economy. So, you know, if there's lowering prices, that's a signal that things are getting more efficient and prices can go down, and then the people actually pay lower prices. But
right. So prices are going back down. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're back now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, but it's not the prices going down that's a bad thing. It's actually the tinkering with the money to keep prices up so that stock prices seem to maintain their value, which is what another aspect of inflation comes into play. So it's done either.
I lost you again.
Oops. Sorry, guys, my internet is messing up.
Yeah, that's okay. So is there anything else you wanted to add before we? All right, I'll just take the next one then, unless you guys have any comments on the inflation. Okay.
Yeah. Just real quick, Calvin. Yeah, I literally did a paper in college on how it's astounding how much that we don't have financial literacy classes. And the more and more I learn about how money actually works, it almost seems intentional. There's absolutely no reason that financial literacy classes should not be mandatory, in my personal opinion, grade 6 through 12. And they need to be every single quarter, like the way you take math, the way you take English. Because I think if people understood it, that they wouldn't make certain financial decisions, and they would also understand like why things like Bitcoin, you know, like I know right now Bitcoin's like kind of in a vulnerable spot, but it's the concept. Like, it's very easy to point a finger at a very specific time that is beneficial for your opinion, whether it's negative or positive. But if you look at the overarching idea of Bitcoin and how like one day, like the last Bitcoin is going to be mined, and then it can't be, you know, we don't have the inflation problem where we just print endless money for whatever we need. I think, again, that's where the education piece is going to be so crucial in what we do here and hopefully takes off and we expand not only the topics, but the places that we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That definitely makes sense. And I think that's part of what we're trying to do here with the class, like just trying to give people the opportunity to, you know, maybe learn some of these topics for the first time or just hear a different perspective on it. So let's I guess we'll just move on to bailouts. I'll do a quick take on that. Since we're butting up against time and I want to make sure we get cover the other ones. So back in 2008, which was the last time bailouts were big on the conversation. Well, just for definition purposes, this is mostly referring to bank bailouts, like when the real estate market collapsed and all these giant financial companies were coming down after doing all these bad loans. And the debate was, oh, should we bail them out or not? Like Lehman Brothers, all those companies, Bear Stearns. My thinking at the time, I mean, granted, I wasn't quite out of high school yet, but that aside, my thinking at the time was just, oh, you know, it's not ideal, but if we don't do this, so many people are going to lose their jobs and the economy is going to crash, so it sucks, but we don't have a choice. But now looking back on it, you know, facing possible bailouts again, it's just, it makes so much more sense now that we kind of have to do that. Otherwise, it's going to create a perverse incentive where, you know, companies will just keep making bad decisions over and over and over again, and, you know, they'll never have a chance to refresh with new management, new companies if necessary, because the same bad companies and bad management will be rewarded by the government for making the same bad decisions with our taxpayer dollars over and over again. And why does that matter? Well, it's a good chunk of what's leading to these financial crises in the first place, outside of the Fed policy that Rob just touched on. As long as we have these perverse incentives, then, you know, it's going to lead to all these booms and busts that are going to, you know, it's going to be a waste of the tax dollars, and it's going to, you know, who's going to be the first people that's going to lose their jobs the minute we enter a recession? Because it's not going to be the laptop class, you know. Well, some of them will, but not all of them. And you know, it's going to hit the classes below them harder. So, you know, when it comes down to it, you have to look at, you know, what's causing these downturns from every angle, and that's certainly a part of it. Any comments on that?
Well, it just goes back to the concept that the bailouts are interfering with the competitive process. If the banks are failing, you have to just let them fail. Sounds terrible, right? I mean, but the regulations and the regulatory capture that led to the situation also needs to be changed. So it really is the same theme of disastrous central planning, governmental interference, and regulatory capture.
Yeah, Regina, you have anything to add?
No, I think you guys covered that pretty well.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into regulatory capture in a couple topics. I know that plays a large role in some of them later on. Foreign policy.
Unknown caller.
I was going to talk about that one myself. I don't want to put you on the spot, Regina, but, you know, having just experienced the Rage Against the War Machine rally and made national news for it with your sign,
I didn't make national news.
Talk about it if you wanted to.
I didn't make national news, but
yeah,
you're famous.
Not famous.
So tell us what you would think it'd be important to cover for that topic.
I'm sorry, which part about rage, just in general, like
foreign policy and war, just in general?
Yeah, I mean, for me it was really educational in the sense of, I mean, it's easy to understand that, you know, they're kind of playing chess with these innocent people's lives. Like, that's what really got me wanting to go to Rage Against the War Machine. It's why even before I, you know, got involved with the Libertarian Party, like, war was the one that, like, you can never convince me, like, why it's necessary. It's just, again, it's kind of like we were talking with things like inflation. It's only the lower class that suffers. You know, it's like, I don't have sympathy for, I don't want to say this. People assume that we have sympathy for Russia. And it's like, it doesn't matter who's involved. It's the innocent mothers and children and the young men basically being sent off to slaughter, because we love to send men off to slaughter, that are affected by this. And understanding also how parties who look like they're not involved are involved. Like, when I started to understand how much of the US, even though we weren't technically involved, but just how all this money that we're sending over is playing a factor. It's like, we are like teetering on the edge and just like trying to put our hands up and say, oh, no, we're just sending aid. And we don't understand how, like, how that can look to actual madmen.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's like, it's easy to say, you know, oh, this brinksmanship isn't going to lead to war, until it does. And we just saw that. Like, I don't think, I mean, maybe some people in the intelligence apparatus could have predicted the conflict breaking out, but your average Joe certainly could not have. So there's only so far you can go with that before the tensions just explode. And, you know, it's not the politicians who are paying the consequences for that.
Yeah, the other thing too is, you know, people kind of forget that war is phenomenal for the economy. And if you don't see like a little bit of a correlation between all the inflation after we printed out all these stimulus checks that everybody thought was this magical free money, and now we are teetering on the edge of getting involved in a nuclear war, like, you have to understand how those two things go together.
That's certainly true for the arms industry. For the economy as a whole, though, it just drains resources away from productive sectors where it could better, much better be used by the private sector as a whole.
Right, because it's a waste of useless resources that doesn't produce anything valuable. So there's right. just a few winners, but the economy in general, and Ron Paul spoke about that at the Rage Against the War Machine, the idea that war is good for the military industrial complex, but for the general economy of the people at home, it's a disaster.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly. So, did you want to expand upon it anymore, Irene? I know you may have just led a small gathering in DC recently about on that topic. So I thought I'd give you a minute to talk about that if you wanted to.
Well, I was part of a team of a large amount of people, and I helped to produce this wonderful event called Rage Against the War Machine. I had a lot of coalition sponsor and organizers led by Angela and Nick. And I think that we did something historic because we formed a coalition of lefties and liberties, and we are working on things and still talk to each other. And I think I would like us to try and talk about that during the lecture series at the Solutionary Center, and to shed light on the concept that we really do actually have a lefty liberty coalition, and we all agree that the oligarchy needs to not exist anymore, that the duopoly needs to not exist anymore, that the military industrial complex needs to not exist anymore. We need to end the Fed. We need to defund the CDC. We need to remove participation from the World Health Organization, and all these things lefties and liberties can agree upon, and so much more. And that people need to understand that they are not in a box. You're not a Republican or a Democrat or a Libertarian or a People's Party person. You're literally just a human who wants.
Yeah.
What do we want?
Yeah, that's really what it is. So it's not like a left-right issue.
Right.
It's or left versus right issue. It's you know, it's really something that that everyone can get on board with, and you know, still keep your identity, which is why I think that the rally attracted as many people as it did. Like, you know, I don't have an exact count, but possibly as much as, you know, since like the early War on Terror era, larger than any event since then, for for an anti-war event at any rate. I could easily believe that. So.
Right. And one of the, exactly. And one of the topics and the ideas, and this is a good segue, is to talk about in this lecture series, the fact that people want food, water, shelter, community, love, and to be productive. Everybody wants that. And we can talk about how, as the human population, we can disagree on the path to those things, but we need to get far, far away from divisive politics and distractions. And that's why, you know, Regina wants to talk about food freedom, which I just love that she wants to talk about that and that we're gonna talk about that. And these are not partisan issues. We need to teach people that these divisive politics boxes that they get put on are imaginary. They're not real, and they're not what humanity needs to be discussing. And that's, you know, the lessons learned of coalition building. And food freedom is really important for so many reasons, which is Regina's gig. So we're going to let her talk about that, if that's okay.
Do we want to transition to that? You want to talk about that now, or do you want to save that to the end?
If you want to hit some of the bigger topics first, we can come back to that.
Okay. We'll definitely hit that at the end. So, Irene, your topic of choice, possibly your favorite topic other than the ones we've already hit on, which would be, I don't want to generalize it and just say like pharma, but everything that's been going on in medicine of late. So what's been going on? How can you, what do you think would be important to highlight in the course? Let's just start there.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think in the introductory lecture, we can talk about the concept of informed consent and bodily autonomy are good ideas for the introduction part of it. And then for me in particular, I'd like to discuss the concepts of medical freedom and Hayek. So what does that mean? And the concepts of Austrian economics and as it relates to medical freedom in this country. And the idea that what happened with COVID mania is an example of a larger problem in this country, which is regulatory capture, which we talked about, and we can really give some good definitions of what it is, but it's really, you know, the government picking the winners and losers, and the fact that, for example, the CDC Foundation funds the CDC, and the CDC Foundation is funded by Big Pharma. And so we need to talk about the fact that the lack of competition in public health, medical research, and the various entities like the FDA who make these decisions is a big problem. So these need to be decentralized. Well, what does that mean? It means that we have to completely change the whole system, because the whole system is having a pervasive problem with lack of competition and lack of innovation and just a huge amount of waste. And that all relates to our freedoms, right? Because we cannot have central planners dictating what we put into our body. And you can hit the lefties on this really easily by saying that they're my body, my choice, as it relates to the abortion topic. Yet a lot of woke lefties jumped on the COVID bandwagon, which makes absolutely no sense. No one should be forced, of course, into having a medical procedure. So that's the biggest thing. And the idea that competition in medicine and competition in various types of agencies that want to discuss what's best for public health and not to be central planners with no discussion is what we need to have.
Yeah, 100%. And it's really crazy that from 2019, it seemed like, I don't know if it was like more of a split between left and right, or if it just was more on the left or something. But it seemed like if anyone was on the side of, you know, not enforcing medical decisions or like particularly vaccinations in schools or something, then, you know, it definitely wasn't as solid of a divide. Now it seems to be completely polarized, where the left is more pushing those things. And I don't know, it just seems like such a quick transition in such a short time period.
Well, it's the woke left, because the coalition members, the non-woke left, the People's Party and a lot of members of the coalition were against the mandates, and right. It actually split them. It split the left into the woke and the anti-mandate left, and the anti-mandate left became aligned with us through the coalition. And yeah. People need to understand things like HR 5546 that removed product liability from all vaccine makers in 1986 and established the vaccine advent reporting system, for which $8 billion or more has been paid out for vaccine injuries before COVID, and the PrEP Act, which prevented any product liability for the COVID vaccine and biologic and anyone who administered it. So that's, again, quintessential government interference, which led to the fact that the pharmaceutical industries didn't hesitate to launch these vaccine and biologics upon the population, when in the preclinical trials before the launching, death, disease, heart attack, strokes, and all these adverse events all happened in the preclinical trials. And if they had product liability, they probably wouldn't even release them to the public, and they need to be recalled. So people need to understand that what happened with COVID mania is related to lack of freedom, lack of competition, central planning, and all the problems that are created for all of the issues in the military industrial complex and the regulatory capture.
Yeah. Even just me looking back at it now, not really paying much attention to it before, but I could tell right off the bat, as you know, just knowing like how the market forces work, as soon as I heard about the 1986 law, it's just my head, oh yeah, that's where it all went wrong. And I'm sure there were some seeds planted before that, but that must have been the nail in the coffin for everything that happened later.
Right, that changes everything, because if the vaccine makers had product liability, then they wouldn't be making all this money without responsibility. So Pfizer and Merck and all of them have been fined many times over by millions of dollars, but they make billions of dollars, so the price of doing business for them. So just think about it. Then they use that money to donate to your legislatures that lock you in your homes during COVID mania. And they use that money to buy ads in mainstream media, which is approaching 70%, that changes the narrative of the general population for which they are viewing these programs. So the law created the fact that they have no liability and all the billions of dollars that they have to go back and influence, right?
Yeah.
It's a big problem. That's where the money comes from, because they have no product liability. They made the law because they were having all these injuries and they were going to threaten not to make vaccines anymore.
Yeah, it just turned into a vicious cycle.
We won't stay here too long.
Regina, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I just have a really big problem with doctors and big pharma just creating the illness and selling the cure that keeps people sick. And that's kind of what ties into the whole food freedom initiative too, is that and Irene brought up a great point where I really hope that people who constantly love to scream, you know, my body, my choice about certain topics, but then wanted you to lose your job, to lose your bank account, to not be able to feed your family, to not be able to participate in public, to be locked in cages in some places, that this actually happened. Like, we cannot deny it, over the same concept.
That's right. It's the great answer to wokeism. Yeah. It's terrible.
A lot of this stuff is connected, and I think that'll become more and more evident, excuse me, in the class.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make?
Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As we go along, like, I mean, like with the foreign policy, like the, for instance, just to go back for a minute, the reckless foreign policy that we've been engaging in right now is leading to a collapse of the dollar as we speak. Like, you know, foreign countries are seeing us as unreliable and no longer trading in the dollar anymore. I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms, but you know, this stuff all connects together in one form or another.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Irene, go ahead.
No, just by happenstance is the plethora of bioweapons labs in Ukraine, which I'm sure has nothing to do with why we're in Ukraine.
Right. So I will go to the next topic then, which is criminal justice. Rob was going to talk about that. I'll just touch on it briefly. One, there's a lot of different elements of it that we could go into. I think that victimless crimes for drug possession and usage is certainly something that needs to be brought in at some point, either here or in the previous section. Just nonviolent crimes in general, like the high sentencing that you're getting for that in a lot of places, that needs to stop. Jury nullification, Rob is probably one of the best people to talk about that. Very short version of that is, you know, even though you technically cannot, there's a lot of restrictions about when you can and can't talk about jury nullification, which is part of the frustrations around it. But in short, if there is an unjust law, like if Regina is going to court tomorrow and being charged with possession, and Irene and I and several other jury members, you know, basically determine like, yes, she violated statute XYZ, but you know, that's an unjust law, so we're not going to charge her, then we could do that. And that's an example of what jury nullification can do. It's just most people don't even know it exists. And I think that's something that really needs to be brought to the forefront.
Yeah, I agree. And then qualified immunity, we need to end that, which ties into the whole criminal justice reform idea. And I like to explain to people that, you know, doctors have malpractice coverage, insurance coverage, and police officers can have something similar to that. And there's databases on us where you can search. It can be a little bit punitive for some doctors and things like that, but that can be some sort of similar system like malpractice for doctors and qualified immunity, and that gives you competition once you do that. When you end qualified immunity and create this alternative system.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I think it's only fair that we give Regina a chance to address the jury. So is there anything you would like to say?
Yeah, it's just I think everybody needs to literally Google jury nullification and understand that. Also, something that I learned recently was how there's a lot of manipulation within the system. Like when it's usually like state appointed, I don't want to say like a public defender will have somebody, this happens a lot in drug cases where they say, if you take the plea bargain, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I just recently learned about this. But if you take like a plea deal or a plea bargain, not understanding that that's not a guarantee, because that public defender has like that has no effect on how that.
Yeah, you're right. It's basically like a handshake agreement. It's not right. A guarantee of anything.
Right. And I think if people understood that and understood how to defend themselves, and again, things like jury nullification, I think we would stop seeing, you know, a lot of people, families being broken up over minor amounts of certain substances, as well as nonviolent drug crimes.
Yeah, because what is it, like less than 5 to 10% of cases actually make it into a courtroom before getting a plea bargain? So,
right.
You know, if that was even just double, the courts wouldn't be able to handle the overflow, and they would have to, you know, they would have to figure something else out and like make better deals.
Right. Or they would have to change the laws so that they're not constantly in court. I mean, one of the most disgusting things, as some people know, I'm working on some legislation in Pittsburgh for entheogenic plants. And one of the things that I was told in trying to figure out, you know, how all the interwining systems work is that the Pittsburgh police feel like when they can't shake down people over small amounts of weed, it is, and I quote, they feel like we're taking their guns away. And if that is true, then one, you need to really reevaluate why you are in law enforcement, and two, you need to understand that no one, in my opinion, has the authority to point at something that grows naturally out of the ground and says, you can't have that now. Like, where does that authority come from other than self-appointed?
I have no words.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so power corrupts. They used to be called peace officers. And marijuana is a plant that grows in the yard, and now the pharmaceutical industrial complex and regulatory capture and all those entities are going to make a lot of money out of it and also manipulate the receptors, which is leading to probably some addiction issues in the future because they're messing with the original plant, which is the same thing that happened with tobacco. So it's just really absurd. I'm for complete deregulation of, you know, the marijuana plant, you know. Marijuana's lives matter, I guess, is my stance. And so I just where's Maj? Marijuana's lives matter.
We gotta get Maj on that.
Can I ask you a question that I've been thinking about for like so many years, but I've never said it out loud? It's related to the prison system and being arrested and getting bonded and all this other stuff. We really are not far removed from debtor's prison and the fact that when people get arrested, if you have money, you're out. And if you don't have money, you're not out, right? You have to stay oftentimes. I mean, yeah, the jails are so full.
That's true to an extent. Like, you can certainly bail yourself out for a while if you have money. And if you don't, then you're stuck there. So to that extent, it's definitely true.
Right. Yeah. So I don't even know how you fix it because the whole world is based on who has money and who doesn't, but.
Well, I haven't thought about this enough to say whether it's like across the board a good thing or not. On the surface, it seems like a good thing, but there are some more progressive, like district attorneys, or I don't know which department falls under, but basically in the cities, they are targeting bond reform, and they're basically saying, you know, we are going to reduce bond in a lot of these nonviolent cases in particular, so it's not some absurdly high amount. I know that's not strictly a libertarian thing, you know, it's something libertarians would support, I would think, but it's, you know, when it comes down to it, it's almost not as much worth our focus as something like, you know, decriminalization and legalization, which is, you know, it's ultimately more important. And, you know, when it comes down to, you know, bail reform, it's just like a patchwork in comparison.
Right, because we're into the fact that if there's no victim, or you didn't harm anybody, you didn't take their stuff, right, then why are you even being arrested, and why are there even laws on the books from it? Right, so it's very in the weeds for us, but it just, you know, bothers me, I guess, is why I brought it up. But yeah, we're, as libertarians, you know, five steps up the ladder from, they shouldn't even be arrested in the first place.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, I don't understand why I have to pay a fine when I haven't been convicted of my crime yet. Like the joke always is like, well, I don't have bail money. It's like, why is that the first thing people think of? What if it's just, I didn't do anything wrong? You know, I think there's certain crimes, like if there's substantial evidence, like in violent crimes, that it's like, this is 98.9% our guy, then maybe you are restricted on how far you can go. But for, like you were saying, like nonviolent crimes, like I don't understand why I have to pay for my freedom when I haven't even been convicted yet, or presume, you know, I essentially presumed guilty until someone looks at the case.
Right. And most of us go back to what we just said, right? I agree. If there's no victim, what is the crime, which goes into all the problems in our
society? Yeah, no victim, no crime. And I think that's another thing that if we don't touch on at the beginning, we'll certainly touch on it by the time we get to the criminal justice section of the presentation. I think we'll just touch on the last two real quick here. Education. So for anyone who's been going to the Philadelphia schools, particularly the public schools, I don't think it's going to take a lot of persuading to convince them that there could be something better. You know, I think what we've been seeing is a student body that has spent, you know, what, like less than half of the time between, or just about half between this moment and March of 2020, like outside of a classroom, like this whole time, because they've been just, you know, shutting down schools for so long, like particularly the cities, longer than everywhere else. And then, you know, mask on, mask off, mask on, mask off, for just semi-arbitrary reasons. I mean, that alone would be enough reason to take a look at it if the schools themselves weren't already so unsafe, which is, you know, that could be a whole episode in and of itself. So we're not going to go down that avenue today. But, you know, there's definitely a lot of areas for improvement. And, you know, there's splits in the libertarian community about, you know, whether school choice should be the preferred route for us to advocate towards, or just complete separation of, you know, education from the government entirely. That's not a debate we're going to cover in the course, but we're certainly at least going to give some highlights of, you know, the failings of the current system, and, you know, the alternatives and that would be better, and just the options that would present. That's the key point, giving you options where you currently have virtually none. And that's the biggest difference. So either one of you want to say anything on that?
I did meet a few teachers who left their jobs and they form these schoolhouses with some parents. And so Blessing in Disguise, they learned that they could pretty much afford to support that teacher with some kids and had their own schools with no regulations and restrictions. And I think that that's where it all needs to go eventually. And the Department of Education, you know, decentralized local communities determining what they think is best for their families and their children's children, excuse me.
Yeah, awesome. I definitely agree with that. And yeah, there've been a lot of interesting alternatives that have been put out there, like in the form of like homeschool co-ops and pods. I did manage to like the past like year or so, manage to go out and see some of them and like some of the things that they're doing. And you know, the possibilities there are very exciting. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of what can happen there. Regina, is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, homeschool your kids.
Yeah, that's definitely something that, you know, we'll have a Q&A at the end of the, like when we actually do the class as well. So we'll see what topics people end up being most interested in. Okay, the last one would be Second Amendment rights. Now, how could we possibly do a class at the Solutionary Center without talking about Second Amendment? That's that's kind of like the raison d'etre, maybe not of the center as a whole, but certainly of like a lot of the initial onus behind what brought it about in the first place. So I'm probably the least qualified libertarian to go into the nitty-gritty details of the specifics of them, the of firearms themselves. But what I can tell you is, you know, it's if you're making certain types of self-defense tools of any sort really illegal, they're not really illegal, because you know, that's not to say the military doesn't get it, that's not to say the police don't get it. You're only preventing private citizens from getting it to be able to protect themselves. And it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, in the middle of the country trying to protect yourselves from bears, or you know you're even possible like rare intruder, or if you're in the middle of an inner city, you know, five blocks away from a police station, and there, you know, there's could be shooting in the middle of the night or something like that. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter, because in either one of those instances you could be just as far away time wise from actually getting help to you, and you should not have to wait, you know, because even if it's 5 minutes, it could be the 5 minutes between life and death. You shouldn't have to rely on them to protect yourself. There's no reason, like the default should not be you do not have this right. The default should be you have this right, unless it's interfering with somebody else's rights. And just the owning something to protect yourself in and of itself is not violating anybody else's rights.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we could use some good examples. Like, so if this person is driving a car and they happen to be on multiple psych meds that increase suicidality and homicidality, and this guy driving the car decides to cross the median so he can get hit by a truck in the middle, right? And he dies and he kills a whole bunch of people with him. Do we take all the cars away in the country?
Well, you know, yeah, it's funny because people have been using cars for similar reasons, you know, that they've been using them to break up protests, particularly in
Charlottesville.
I don't remember the exact situations, but I think it was like in Europe. There's, you know, they don't have the guns anymore there, at least they're not as accessible. So they're just using cars instead.
Right. And I just bring up the example of how various medications, especially when changed with people with problems, have a black box warning for suicidal and homicidal ideation. And we also need to talk about and bring up the example of how when school shootings occur, certain narratives drive us to the gun discussion, and we need to unpack that and have the conversation and discuss the fact that that's a human being who decided to kill. And human beings kill each other. And we can look at how many human beings kill each other in cars and how many human beings are killed by medical error, which is, you know, 350,000 a year. Don't quote me on that because I haven't looked at it recently, but around 350,000 people are harmed by medical error. You know, I think we need to unpack that deliberately and specifically on the blackboard or the whiteboard and say, you're being put in this box to have this conversation about guns and school shootings, but it's not what it's all about. And we need to understand the person involving the shooting. We need to understand the cofactors, and we need to understand if someone's going to kill, they're going to kill. And yeah, we're not taking all the cars away.
Right. Yeah. If you, I guarantee a lot of these people who are calling for stronger gun control, if their insurance specifically went up, even if they don't drink, if their insurance went up because they live in a bar or in an area dense with bars, and there are people who decide to get behind the wheel and drive, I guarantee you they would be in an uproar. Like, it comes down to the responsible people in those situations should not be penalized for the actions of a small fringe amount of people who are not following the laws, who don't care if there's a sign that says you can't do this, who are buying them any way, shape, or form. They're not registering. You cannot punish many for the unfortunate acts of a few, because what stops some of these school shootings is guns. That's a fact.
Right. And we also need to know what reasons led to the fact that humans are so distraught.
We have a mental health issue in this country. We don't have, I don't think we have a gun issue. We have a mental health issue, and we need to start taking it very, very seriously and look at examples of where gun control has not worked. Like, I fully believe we would tear each other apart with our bare fists if you banned all weapons tomorrow. If someone is driven to that point, whether it's from an external influence of something they're taking or using, and I mean that in all shapes and forms, or if they have just decided that I no longer am going to respect human life, I don't respect my life, and I don't respect others' lives, so I am going to interfere with their right to live, then you need to look. I mean, look at the UK, you know, how their gun crime, or I'm sorry, not gun crime, their knife crimes, there's more stabbings, and it's like, that's a perfect example. That's a statistical, like, leftists love their statistics. That's a statistical example that more laws do not work.
Right. It goes back to government interference, central planning, and all of that. And also, you know, I think Maj talks about this, which, of course, you know, Maj talks about a lot of things related to this so brilliantly, is if you have a neighborhood where you know that there's a high gun ownership and you're a criminal, you're not going in that house.
Yeah.
So, which is why Black Guns Matter and where he works is so profoundly important and brilliant.
Yeah. There's another aspect to it also. Is, let's say you know, the three of us lived in the same urban neighborhood, and they just went through the neighborhood recently and took everyone's guns away. So everybody knew there's no guns in this neighborhood. Well, guess if I had no morals and just felt like doing whatever I wanted and the cops weren't around, guess what I could do now without fear if I saw either one of you walking down the street? I could just, you know, knock you down, steal your purse, do whatever, and not be worried about any concealed carry that you might have.
Right, and it's a constitutional
advantage.
Right.
I'm just me being me.
Right. Yeah, there's so much to it, but I think, yeah, I agree. I think during the course, and I'm probably not the one doing this, but we have to unpack those in your face issues and explain the misleading and mainstream media narrative and all of that stuff and really unpackage it for the students. I think it would be profoundly beneficial.
Well, slight correction though. I think Regina might have the edge on me as being a champion and all, but a bit of a technicality. Anyway, I did want to make sure we had a chance to go into the bonus topic that we might have hinted on at the beginning, because I don't know when we actually started the episode. Do you want to talk about the potential follow-up class that you might be doing?
Yeah, I'll keep this pretty brief. I am going to start offering a cultivation class for how to grow medicinal mushrooms that you can make into your own capsules. You can cook with them. You can, some of them you can just eat raw. There's a lot of healing that nature gives us, and I do believe that food is medicine, and you should know how to grow your own medicine. You should know as much as you can on how to, you know, raise livestock. And I know in the cities that's very tricky. So you have to start smaller. You know, you should know how to grow as much of your food as possible. There's so much being put into our food supply that is negatively affecting our health, our physical health, and our mental health. And as someone who has healed themselves from mental issues and issues with food, I'm really passionate about giving people essentially the autonomy to take their health. Like, there is nothing more sacred in this world than your health. Like, this is it. This is the body that you get. And you need to be conscious of what you're putting into your body. Like, of course it's easy to go grab the takeout. Of course it's easy to order Uber Eats. But it's like, if you saw someone putting actual poison into their body, like literal, like let's go with like arsenic, you would be like, what are you doing? Like, why aren't we doing that for all of the not milk that is now? And I want to clarify with this. Some people actually have an actual medical issue that they cannot digest certain things. So they have to make, they have to go through like food elimination.
Lactose intolerant.
Yeah. Yeah. They have actual intolerances. Versus we made something trendy. Like, we made soy milk trendy. We made oat milk trendy. And a lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, you know why it's so delicious in your latte? Because it's sugar. It's something insane, like 20 grams of sugar per serving, and it has literal Tums in it. That's why you think it's curing your tummy issues from all the other garbage you're putting into yourself. So again, it's thinking it's giving you a cure, but it has so many other negative aspects to it that I really think we have come back to, again, growing all your own food, cooking all your own food, and just understanding that, again, like we've talked about tonight, where a lot of these webs touch each other. I think almost all of these webs, if we drew it out in a crazy pattern, would all overlap at some point. You have to understand that this is done for a reason. 60% of your serotonin. Now, it is different than the serotonin that is produced in your brain. 60% of your serotonin is made in your gut. So what do you think happens when you do nothing but put bullshit into your body? You feel like shit.
Regina, and that pathway of serotonin is interfered by glyphosate, which is Roundup, which has contaminated your food, which also leads to celiac disease and leaky gut, which leads to lack of health and wellness when your gut is not healed. I absolutely agree with you 100%. And just think that the path to health and wellness lies in your biochemical order, which lies in your ability to have cellular homeostasis, which lies in what you consume. And the issue with that is that the food industrial complex is just as corrupt as the pharmaceutical industrial complex and is just as corrupt as the military industrial complex. And the fact that the nutritional value of a food has diminished by over 50% because of how it's grown and all the soils issues, and also the fact that the genetic modification of our foods and all the pesticides in this food has caused a major problem. And the overwhelming majority of people that are fat because they're nutritionally deficient and they're storing fat because they're in a nutrition deficit because they're eating poison. And natural foods and artificial flavors and natural flavors and all that is actually an unregulated industry. And actually there's thousands of chemicals that are in American foods that are not in European foods. And so I just agree with you 100% that terrain-based health and wellness, there were nutraceuticals that they could have promoted during the early COVID times, vitamin C, quercetin, vitamin D, above 50 nanograms per milliliter had very minimal morbidity and mortality in COVID virus or any other virus. And so I agree with you 100% that the food freedom, your project and your passion with that, and you lived it. And I have had a similar pathway for a different reason due to my vaccine injury. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'd like to help you with some of your projects if you let me in, because I think that food freedom is very important to medical freedom and very important to being a sovereign being with bodily autonomy. So I commend you on your work, and I'm really excited about everything that you're doing. It's so brilliant.
Yeah, that will definitely have to be a topic for a future episode.
Yes. So yeah, I know we're running
over tonight, but
I know.
I wow, I'm so
a sample of what you'll get. But you know, the short version is if you come to the first class, the Liberty 101, then you'll just learn how to live. And if you come to the second class, then you might just learn how to eat. So there you go. Certainly a lot of expertise that's looking to be shared here. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes from this. We were discussing the possibility of doing a show afterwards as well, but we'll leave it at that until we get the details sorted out. I want to make sure we can deliver on what we're talking about doing here. So does anyone have any closing thoughts before we wrap up here? We'll do plugs, but just any closing thoughts for now. Okay, fair enough. I think, don't worry, because when we're teaching the class, it's not going to be 10:20 at night. We'll be a little bit earlier than that. So we'll be good. So anyway, you can... again, come see us at the Take Human Action Tour this weekend, April 1st and 2nd, New York City. Myself, Irene, and Autumn and Jacob, I know, will all be there. A lot of good speakers there as well. Come check out the LPPA table. There should be a setup with Liberty Speaks merchandise there as well. There's one of the sponsors for the event. So Andy, I'll give a shout out as well to Jacob, the organization he's working with, Libertarian Christian Institute. They'll have a table there as well. So definitely pay a visit to them. You can follow everything we're doing at LP Mises Cox PA on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube to get in touch with us. If you're looking to learn more about the solutionary class that we're going to be doing, or get looking to help out in any way, you can email us at pamisescaucus@gmail.com. So, Irene, you want to give any plugs?
Hi. You guys can see me on Twitter at Irene Mavrikakis, and contact me through libertyspeaks.world. That's our Liberty Speaks website, and there's a contact us form. And I look forward to seeing everybody at the Take Human Action Tour. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Regina.
Yeah, you can find me at the LPPA Badger on Instagram and Twitter. If any of the things that I've talked about tonight or we've talked about interest you, even if you're not a Libertarian Party, I absolutely want to still talk to you and build these issue coalitions. If you are interested in these classes and potentially would want to host them, or if you have a center to host them, like, please get at us. We're hoping to expand this. And then I just also want to represent that we have a brand new store for the Libertarian Party of Allegheny County. This is the softest hoodie I own. I'm not just saying that because it has the sweet logo on it. I think we have the link at some point drop in. But we do have merch. So if you want to, it's a great conversation starter. I've already had three great conversations. What is that? So it's a great way to kind of open up the conversation without just seeming kind of like an aggressive nut about a certain topic, which I sometimes have to control. Please reach out to me. Again, if any of these issues spoke to you or you have a story that you want to contribute, I want to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just going to drop that in the chat real quick. So do those say Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania or Libertarian Party of Allegheny County, or what are they saying?
This one says Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, but there is Allegheny specific. There's ones with just like the little hedgehog logo. We have a bunch of stuff up there. We got kids stuff. We got fanny packs coming at some point. I am super excited about that as a pro wrestler. So keep an eye out on the merch, but we have a lot of great stuff over there. So check out the store.
All right, sounds good. So I still don't know how the show started, so I don't entirely know how I'm going to end it. So bear with me. Sorry if this drags out a little bit long, but consider us ending the show at this point. So we will see you all at the Take Human Action Tour this weekend and on the show next week. So until then, don't forget to take human action. Bye.
Thank you, Calvin.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Let's see.
This is always a story.
Okay, I guess I might just have to leave the old-fashioned way. So,
a little Irish goodbye.
I don't really have a choice. So, we'll see. I'll just, everybody just leave on their own, I guess.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
I'll figure it out. Bye.
Bye. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to figure out how to leave.
Yeah, okay. I got you.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.